This is HPR episode 2448 entitled Useful Bash Functions, Part 3, and is part of the series Bash Scripting. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 34 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, a few more possibly useful Bash functions are discussed.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello everybody, my name is Dave Morris. Welcome to Hacker Public Radio. Today I am doing the third show in the series about bash functions. I think the series will stretch to a fourth episode, but no more than that. I'm not sure how interesting this is to people. If I get any positive feedback, I might do more, but I suspect that won't happen. This one covers three functions I think might be of interest. They are somewhat more advanced than the earlier shows I've done in this series. You might find that there's things that you can learn from it. You might also see some pretty glaring errors that I have missed, so feel free to point them out and comment on these or criticise them however you see fit. These are things I've written for my own use, and I use them on pretty much a daily basis. The first one is called read_value, and its simple purpose is to, in a script, to output a prompt and read a string. You could do that with just a simple read command. There's a read command in Bash. But I wanted to be able to do away with all the faffing around of writing read statements and checking their results and so on and so forth. So I wanted to simplify it. So it nominates a variable into which the result is going to be put. Now I've got a typical example of a call. You just type, you can run these on the command line, but you have to source them first. So it's the command, the bash command is source, S-O-U-R-C-E, and then the name of the file containing the bit of bash, the function. And I've included these functions as individual files with this show, so you can fiddle around with them if you're so minded. So given that you've sourced it so that Bash knows this as a function, you would simply type on the command line read_value and then some prompt string in quotes. And I've put an example, what is your name? ? And then the next argument is the name of a variable, which I've just called name. So this will prompt, what is your name? You type in a name, press return, and then the thing exits. You can then echo that variable $name, and you get back the name that you typed. Not particularly world-shattering. It does take a default as well as the third argument. So there's another example here that shows read value being used to ask the question, where do you live? It's going to put the answer into a variable called country, and the default is USA. So it says, where do you live, USA? You can delete that and put another value in instead. So my long show notes, there's very little in the short notes, goes into quite a lot of detail. It shows you the source of this particular function. It's not particularly complex. It's only 38 lines long, and there's not a huge lot in it, but as with a lot of Bash things, there's quite a lot of subtleties in the way it does stuff. It does have some similarities with the functions I've talked about before. There was one called yes_no, which I talked about in earlier episodes, and I've pointed to those in the links if you want to go and check them. Now, this one wants to return a result to the caller. But Bash functions by default can't do that. They can't easily return stuff to the level, to the script or to the command line that you're calling them from. When you issue a return command within the function, you can only give it a number. And the usual convention is to return zero to show that it was the result was true, and return one for false. Others, you could use other numbers to signal other things. But you can't send back strings. This does that, but it does it in a rather roundabout way. You can write your functions so that they always write to the same global variable. So you could do something like write a variable called maybe read underscore value underscore result or something like that, and then you could call it and then get back the look at that variable. But the trouble is, it gets quite messy. I have worked in systems where that really was the only way to achieve it. There was no hand back type mechanism. You just write to global variables that were visible after you'd run the function procedure or whatever the hell it was. That took some management. It's not impossible, but you can do better things with Bash, although it's not entirely obvious. So like I said, the main purpose of this particular function is to call the Bash built-in command read, and we want to be able to deal with a default value. And if you look at the source of the function, you'll see that in lines 18 to 20, it's numbered in the listing, then you can see there that we set a default value from the default that's been handed to the function, if there is one. So it checks to see if the variable called default is non-zero length, not empty. And if so, then it sets it to contain an option to the read command. The read command itself is performed on line 26, but it's a little bit more complicated. It's not just a plain read. We call it in the command eval, E-V-A-L. What this does is allows you to compose a command in a string, and then it runs that command for you. And it allows you to do more complicated things the way that you've built that command string. So in this particular case, the string that's being given to eval is a read command with a minus R option, which controls how it deals with backslashes, minus E. And then if there's a default, then that will be minus I in the string that the default value was. Minus P gives you the prompt, and then it finishes off with the variable into which the answer is to be written. And in this particular case, it's written to a variable called var. So if you were just using read on its own, you could just type these things out. But since we're trying to run it in a function where some of these things are being handed through to it by the function, we need to go to this extra length of running it in eval. If you tried to do this without using eval, so if you'd written the command in the function read minus R space minus E dollar default minus P and in quotes dollar prompt space var, then what would happen is that the contents of default would not be parsed by Bash. The difficulty is that when Bash runs the command, there are certain strings that it will expect, and these, in the case of the prompt, they will have been filled by parameter substitution. But there isn't a thing that causes parameter substitution on the command line. It's not straightforward to make a command up from bits which are held in variables, because Bash doesn't go and substitute the variables into the command string itself. It would need to do it twice. It would need to look at it first to see what the command was and so forth. And then it would need to, or maybe it would first need to do all the substitutions, and then it would need to go back and execute the command. It doesn't do that. But when you use eval, it does. You get two scans of it. This is quite hard to understand At least I think it is. I certainly have struggled over this in my earlier days of using Unix and stuff. So what I did here was I ran this read value function using one of the features of Bash, which is to trace what it's doing. You do that with the command set space hyphen x. That sets on tracing of commands. Then you type read value, what is your surname, blah, blah, blah. And you then see all of the steps that are going on as the contents of that function are being executed. Each line is preceded by a plus sign, and you can see something about what it's doing. So, for example, the function itself starts with a local command where it sets the variable prompt to whatever the first positional parameter is, $1. Well, the first positional parameter is the prompt, and it is what is your surname, and you actually see it being set to that in this this trace info. I won't read all of this stuff, but the really two of the interesting things anyway are that you can see the default value being set to hyphen I and then the string not provided, which is what was used on the command line. And then you can see the eval being issued where it is the read command that's being assembled consists of this hyphen I quote not provided. There's a lot of backslashes in here because there's quotes within quotes and stuff, and that's all done automatically by Bash. It gets a little confusing, but then there's a line plus plus, it begins with two pluses. Then you see the read being executed after it's been assembled with eval, and then you get the prompt, what is your surname? And I actually typed an answer to this, and you can see the answer being dealt with. I'll come on to the other eval in a moment. I then turn off this tracing thing, which you do with set plus x, and then echo the value that I get back in the variable surname, and it is the name that I typed. The second eval in the function, see, it's actually, even though it's only 38 lines long, it's actually a little bit more complicated. Actually, before I go on to that, I should mention that after the eval, line 27, there is a thing that says res equals, then in quotes, dollar question mark. Dollar question mark is a built-in variable inside Bash which gives you the result of the last command. Now, if that last command was not zero, returned a non-zero, these are numeric responses, then it means that, in the case of read, the person typing stuff has hit control D, which is end of file, which would have caused the read to abort. So it's checking this, and if the read's aborted, it says so. It echoes a message saying read aborted, and then returns a false value, which is 1. I think I did that in the previous examples, but I thought it was worth mentioning again. This is just standard boilerplate stuff that one does in Bash scripts. So the final eval, which is on line 36, this is the bit where we're trying to return a value back to the caller. Now, inside the function, we have collected the name or whatever it is that's been requested of the user of the script, and we've stored it in a variable called var, V-A-R. But there's a variable called output name, which was set from the second positional parameter of the function. And that's the name of the variable in the calling environment, which is to receive the answer. So how do you do that? Well, one way of doing that is to make up a command, which is the name of the variable equals the value that's been collected. So you'll see the line 36 says eval, then in double quotes, dollar output name equals single quote dollar var. So what that will do is we'll construct the command, whatever output name was, surname in my example, equals, and then whatever was typed in. And if you look at the listing of the trace, you can see eval surname equals, and then the the name I typed in. And you get another line after it, which is the actual command. So the eval shows the command that's being constructed, and the next line with two pluses beginning it at the start shows surname being set to the string. Now, surname is going to be a variable which is not local to the function. It's actually a global variable. But the point is that you can define which variable it's going to be. It's not going to be a fixed one that gets the answer. Okay? That was quite a long-winded explanation of something that looks simple, but there's layers to it. So the second function, these three form a group of like things that I use together. This one's called check value. It's designed to be used alongside this read value. It takes two arguments. One is a value that you want to check. It actually doesn't take two arguments. It takes n arguments. There's always a first one, and then there's any number of further ones. The first one is a value that you want to check. So it'd be something like the name that was returned in the previous example. And then it's followed by any number of regular expressions, bash regular expressions, that to be used to check validity. The first thing that the function does, you can see it setting the local variable whose name is value. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but it sounds silly when I read it out. But anyway, it's setting it to the first positional parameter. Now, there is a digression here, because the way it does this, we talked about this. I did a series way back where I talked about parameter substitution and the magic you can do in Bash with parameter substitution. And the version of it here is different from the versions I talked about back in that show. So you're seeing value equals, then in double quotes, dollar open brace one. That means parameter 1. Then a question mark, and then a string, usage, colon, blah, blah, blah. And then a close brace, close double quotes. What that means is substitute in the contents of positional parameter 1 and put it into value. But if parameter 1 is missing, you just call check value without any arguments at all, say, then or it's a null value, then you might want to take action and abort things to say, you called this wrong, there's a mistake here or something. And that's what this does. But the format that I talked about back in that show way back when was where you had the name of the parameter, which is just one in this case, followed by a colon, a question mark, and then some string. The string was used as an error message, and the thing would abort if the parameter was null or unset. But the variant I'm using here misses out the colon. And what that does is it checks to see, it just checks existence, not whether it's empty. Because there are times when we might want to check a value which is empty, and it's perfectly valid for it to be empty. So the first thing after this that it does is on line 15, there's a shift command. And what shift does is it throws away the first argument in the list of positional parameters. It throws away the first one. So it throws away the one that's referred to as $1. And that's because we've got a copy of it. We don't want it anymore. But we are going to be dealing with the remaining ones. So we want to be able to just get them on their own. So line 16 to 18, it checks in an if command the value $hash. $hash is Bash's record of the number of positional parameters. So if that value is 0, then it wants to, we want to flag it as an error, because we needed some regular expressions to compare things with. So put out an error message and return value false. Then the next thing is a while loop, which begins at line 24 and runs up to line 30 of the function. And it just processes each of the positional arguments until there aren't any more. It's using the test dollar hash, number of positional parameters, greater than or equal to 1. So when that becomes false, then it will stop. Inside the loop, it's doing a comparison of the value that came in as argument 1 to the function against $1, which is now the first, which is the first positional parameter, and it's using regular expression matching. Now, I haven't really talked much about bash regular expressions. I plan to do that in another show, actually. If there's a match, then there's a variable called matches, which is incremented. Then after the if command, then there's another shift. So that just that throws away the positional parameter that it's just checked. It's treating it as a stack. It will just go through one after the other, and it will delete them out of its stack as it goes, as it uses them. So once that loop is finished, then the matches variable will be zero or non-zero. If it's zero, it means nothing matched, and in that case we return false. If there were any matches at all, we return true, and that's lines 35 onwards is the if-then-else thing. And that's it. Again, it's pretty simple, but there's elements of bash magic, if you like, that you need to understand to be able to fully appreciate what it can do. Now, what I did was, in the notes, I made an example of how you'd use this. I showed the source commands for read value and check value. You only need to do them once in a session. Makes these things available to the bash. Then I declare a temporary function I've called demo, and functions are just a name, two brackets, two parentheses, and then some statements in curly braces. In the temporary function, the demo function, there's a variable called name, which is set to nothing. Then read value is called in a loop. This is an until loop. I've never really talked about loops in great detail in bash, but maybe I should cover them in another series at some point. Anyway, it's just a type of test, and read value returns a true or false, remember. And the read value is being called with the prompt, what is your first name? And it's going to store this in a variable called name. And it concatenates that command with two ampersands with a test. And the test simply checks to see, test is a built-in command, which is sort of used behind the scenes in sort of normal tests you see inside square brackets or double square brackets. So it's checking using the minus n option. Minus n means the string that follows, check to see whether it's non-zero, non-null, not empty, I suppose. So basically that loop continues running until a name is provided. So if you hit Control D, it will re-loop because nothing was returned. And if you don't type anything at all, just hit return, then it will continue to loop. So that loop just ensures you get a name. Then it's followed with check value inside an if. Check value uses the contents of name as the first argument, and then there are two regular expressions. If there's a match, it simply echoes hello and then the contents of name. If there's no match, then it says that name isn't valid. The two regular expressions are pretty simple. The first one matches any sequence of upper and lowercase letters, one or more. No spaces, no numbers, just uppercase and lowercase letters. That's all it will accept. The second one was designed to take simple hexadecimal sequences. So hexadecimal, you normally write them as 0x to show that they are hexadecimal. And it accepts a lower or uppercase x after the 0. And then it will take any of the hexadecimal digits, which is A to F, upper or lowercase, 0 to 9, and one or more of those. So I show it being run. It only does one for each one, once it gets a name, then it exits. So if you run demo, what's your first name? You type in a name and it says hello. And it works if the name is just simple alphabetics. It also works if you type 0x1101. But if you type in, what's your first name, Jim42, it says, no, that's not valid, because we're not catering for numbers in digits in names. You could do, of course, but I thought it was quite amusing that you could type as a name 0xDEAD42, and that was accepted. But if you didn't put the 0x on the front, DEAD42, dead 42, is not valid. So you can do some quite sophisticated things with this. So the final one is really just a concatenation of the previous two. This one is called read and check, and it uses read value to read a value and uses check value to check it, and it just loops until it gets a valid reply or control D to abort it. As its arguments, it expects a prompt string, which can't be null. It expects the name of a variable to receive the result, which again can't be null. It will take a default value, which is optional, but if you don't provide one, you do need to put a placeholder in there, like open and close quotes, just as a null string. And then after that, it takes any number of regular expressions. So it's, you can tell it's a combination of all of the above. So the first thing it does is to call read value on line 16 with the relevant parameters, so prompt and output name, the names I've called them, and a default if there is one. So if the result of that is false, it's actually an if not read value, then it will exit the function with a false value. So the case where that would happen would be if Control D was hit. So we need to check that. Otherwise, Control D is just going to fall through to and do the rest of the work in the function if you are trying to abort it. So after that read value, it will run shift to clear away the first three arguments in the positional parameters list. Shift can take a number, which is the number of things to clear away. They could type shift, 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 but shift 3 is more efficient. It takes less typing. Then there's a loop, another until loop, from lines 20 to 26. And it checks, it's running check value to check the answer that came back from read value and match it against a list of regular expressions. Now, this is done in a way you might not have seen. The first argument to check value consists of, in double quotes, dollar open brace exclamation mark output name close brace close quote. What that means is it's doing an indirect, so-called indirect expansion. Now, output name is a variable which holds the name of a variable. So remember, the thinking behind read value was that you gave the function the name of a value into which it was to write stuff. So if we want to do further checks on that value inside this function, we can't simply use output name, because output name is just the name of another variable, a global variable in the caller's environment. So use this indirect expansion, and what it means is examine the context of output name and use what is there as the name of a variable whose value we require. So it's doing a sort of two-level reference. Indirect expansion is the term that's used. So that value is being passed to check value for checking. And the other argument, which in quotes is $at, is a way of representing all of the positional parameters to the function. So remember, we deleted the first three, so we're left with however many regular expressions were provided. Now, if check value doesn't return true, then the until will loop. And because it returned false, it must not have matched. So an error message is generated, invalid input, and it shows the using this indirect expansion again, the value that was given to the read value earlier, saying this is not valid. And then it calls read value again in another if, in the same way as before. If read value the second time round is given control D, then it will also exit from the loop and from the function. Once the loop ends after a valid check, the function will return 0, which is true. So I've given an example of how you might call this. I actually wrote this to be used in a function that I in a script that I use to manage my HPR submissions, like this one. And so my example, I put the source commands for each of the files containing these functions. You wouldn't do this normally. You'd have them in the script that you were preparing, most likely. And then it calls read and check with the prompt enter slot. This would be asking for an HPR queue slot number. The variable it's going to be put into is called slot. There's no default, so we give it a blank string, an empty string. And then the only regular expression it's matching against is the string HPR in lowercase, followed by a number between 0 and 9 and one or more of those. The HPR square bracket 0 hyphen 9 close square bracket plus string would match anything, any HPR show number. But we want also to allow this function to receive, this call of the function, to be happy with a null response. So that string was put into parentheses followed by a question mark. And what the question mark is, it says whatever the expression that precedes me, which in this case is a compound thing in parentheses, I'd be prepared to accept 0 or 1 of them. So it's the equivalent of having nothing. You could have done two regular expressions, one without the parentheses and the question mark, and the next one being simply an empty string. In all of these cases, I've put an anchor, a start of string and an end of string anchor either end. So I would put that in as well, with nothing in between. And that just helps to deal with it. It would reject cases where there were leading or trailing spaces. You could get cleverer and actually allow those leading and trailing spaces if you wanted to. But then the thing, the other end, would need to trim them off. Anyway, running it, I typed in HPR42 with capitals, and it comes back invalid input HPR42 because we're only catering for lowercase. Then it asks again, and I just hit return, and it then ends quite happily because that's a valid expression. Echo the contents of slot, but I put slashes either side of it just so you can tell that there's nothing between the slashes, because what you get back is two slashes in succession. So the thing is empty. So that's the sort of stuff that you can do with it. Like I said, I've certainly used these. I use them all the time. And not only in my show submission stuff, but in lots of other things. They're not 100% bulletproof, I have to say. As I was preparing this, I found a bug in one of them. So, you know, they're not perfect, but then very little in software is. I don't know what would happen when you gave it a regular expression, when you gave check value or read and check a bad regular expression, whether there are things that could make it blow up. It'd certainly make it misbehave, but you know, there's no validation of the regular expressions. The whole business of passing information back from a function using eval is messy. It does work, but it's messy. But there's a new feature, I think relatively new in Bash, called nameRef, which allows you to do this in a cleaner way. But I'm not going to look at that here. We've already spent a lot of time on this one. So if you liked it, or you can think of any improvements, or you thought it was rubbish, or whatever, you wish I'd stop doing this and go away, and then let me know, because all feedback is useful. So you can see in the links to the previous shows on this subject, and that there are downloadable versions of the functions and of the trace if you want. I'm not quite sure why you would, but there you go. All right, that's it then. Bye bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.